Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 357 of the podcast. I hope you have recovered from the holiday madness and are happy to be back in the writing routine. As Gustav Flaubert said, be regular and orderly in your life that you may be violent and original in your work. And I love that quote. And I certainly find that I create more when I'm in a normal routine. And of course, we all love celebration. We love holidays. And I love traveling, which is when I collect ideas and I fill the creative well and I'm out in the world. But I create best when I am not so overstimulated or overfed. And the important thing there is create a life you don't want to escape from, as the Seth Godin put it a few years ago, and a quote that I always looked back on and went, okay, so how do I create a routine where I really just love my routine rather than trying to escape all the time on a holiday because I don't like my daily life? So that would be my thoughts on the new year and getting back to routine. So today I'm talking about how to be creative in writing and business with my friend and creative mentor, Orna Ross. Now, Orna talks about free writing in this session, and you'll find out more about that in the show. But my husband, Jonathan, started free writing when he listened to this interview, which we recorded before Christmas, and he edits the video for YouTube. So he listened to the video and started free writing, and he's finding all kinds of benefits from it. And we've been talking a lot, Jonathan and I, about how long it takes to unwind the corporate world. And Jonathan left in September 2015 is when he joined the company. And it takes a long time to kind of try and find yourself again when you've been crushed down for many years, you know, sort of 20 years, more than that. So your creative soul is sort of buried under all these layers. And free writing can help you recognize that self that is under all these different layers. And I've certainly found over time, I think that's why my fifth book, Desecration, was where I started to really find my voice in fiction, because before that I was kind of crushed by all those years of working in the corporate world. So just some thoughts on free writing there. So if you want to kickstart your creativity, or you really do feel like your creative soul, that little spark that is you, is kind of buried beneath a whole load of other things in life, then definitely check out some of the suggestions in this show. So in publishing and futurist stuff this week, I'm actually going to save all of it because there's loads of it. And I'm going to do a show next week, just me again. And I will look ahead at the trends and predictions that might impact authors in 2018. So I've been reading lots of them in all different markets, actually, you know, the financial markets, you know, retail, which is fascinating, as well as some of the publishing stuff. So next week's show will just be me talking about trends and what I think might happen this year. So that hopefully will be interesting. In terms of my personal update, I started the screenplay for Map of Shadows this week. My intention, I mean, obviously last week I talked about my goals and screenplays are on my list for 2018, but I had intended to start work on the next Arcane thriller set between New Orleans and San Francisco. Still don't have a working title on that. But because I think I did three books in December, because Healthy Writer came out 28th of December, and we're still doing all the marketing for that, I still feel a little bit burned out, or not so much burned out, I guess, but I'm just not ready to start another book project in my creative time. But I want to use the, I have 2 hours a day when I'm sort of 2 to 2.5 to 3 hours, depending on how much I get into it, but to kind of work on fiction stuff and JF Penn things. So I started
Map of Shadows screenplay, and actually it's really, really fun. Now, I am using the Scrivener template. I do have Final Draft, which is the screenplay software, but I opened it and went, I don't want to learn how to use that right now, but I know how to use Scrivener. So I'm using the Scrivener template and really enjoying turning the book into a screenplay. It's a very different form of writing. It's, you know, present tense. It is show, don't tell at the most extreme, because there's no internal thoughts, no written backstory. You have to show it. It's really interesting. So I'm enjoying that. And my plan is to just do a basic adaptation, just go through the book and do a draft. And then, and because my story structure, I did structure the story in, you know, before I wrote the novel. So there is a structure there, and it's already quite visual because I am a visual writer. And so I'm going to get that first draft done and then start layering various aspects and self-editing before I then work with some script editors. So very excited about that. I've also booked for London Screenwriters Festival, which I've been to a couple of years running, and not last year, the year before, I can't remember anyway, but I really find that festival fascinating. So I've booked for that. So I'm happy that I've made a start on one of my goals. But don't worry, if you're a fan of the Arcane novels or if you want another map book, they will also come this year. I've also been working on various marketing aspects for The Healthy Writer. If you've been watching the blog this week or the YouTube channel, both Ewan and I have done individual videos talking about our lives. And there's some video of me walking along the canal path and Ewan running up gorgeous scenery in the Lake District. So those have been happening. We have also pretty much decided that we're going to do an audiobook. Now, we were debating this and we couldn't really work out what kind of voice to use, because the book, if you have the book, thank you to everyone if you bought the book, I hope you're finding it useful. They are different chapters. So some chapters are me and some are Ewan. It's not like some of the other books I've done, like Risen Gods with Jay Thorne, we had one voice, or Me and My Mum with Penny Appleton, we have one voice. But this book has two separate voices. And so I thought we were going to have trouble. And then we realised that the answer was to use two different voices in the audiobook. So I'll be using my usual narrator, Caroline, and we're just trying to find someone to match Ewan's voice, or not necessarily match, but one he is happy with. So hopefully we'll be getting the audiobook done for The Healthy Writer by, I guess, March, probably, by the time we've had it recorded, QA'd, put through ACX, etc. So thanks to everyone who sent pictures of The Healthy Writer out in the world. And if you have started to be more healthy in 2018, you can tweet us or Instagram or Facebook. I don't really know how to use hashtags on Facebook, but certainly on Twitter or Instagram, if you use Healthy Writer, hash Healthy Writer, if you do any exercise or if you take a picture of the book or on your phone or whatever, and tell us if you implement any of our tips. And I am going to be using hash Healthy Writer for my own accountability this year. I did 21 kilometers on New Year's Day and I did 12 and a half kilometers yesterday. Another plan walk for Sunday. And so I hope you'll join me this year and be a healthy writer. So useful stuff. I have two things for you this week. First of all, this is something I'm doing across the website, so expect more of these over the year. I have just added a new cheat sheet, which is basically like a downloadable PDF, 7 steps to write your novel. So if you want to write a novel in 2018, you can get your free cheat sheet at thecreativepen.com/7steps. That's the number 7. STEPS. And the links will be in the show notes and you can download that. Hopefully it'll get you started. And there's a video as well. So if one of your goals is to write a novel, you might find that useful. That's thecreativepen.com/7steps. And if you write nonfiction, or if you want to, and you'd like to get your book done and finished in 90 days, which I think is definitely achievable for nonfiction, even if it's your first, I think it's less achievable for fiction. I think 90 days for your first novel or novella is tough because we have to learn a lot. a lot of different skills for fiction, but for nonfiction, it's definitely achievable. So if you would like to write nonfiction, come along to my free webinar with the lovely and enthusiastic Chandler Bolt. Chandler is a wonderful entrepreneur who's been on the show before, and he's younger, as in he's millennial, and he's awesome, as in if you think I'm enthusiastic, just multiply it by three and you'll get Chandler. He's a force of nature. And that free webinar is on Thursday, 18th of January at 2 p.m. US Eastern or 7 p.m. UK. And you can register to get the recording or join us live, and you'll get the live Q&A as well. thecreativepen.com/Jan18, J-A-N-1-8. We'll be talking about how to find your book idea, how Chandler wrote his book so fast, and he's written a number of them now, and how you can too, and how to leverage your book into a bigger business. And that is why I think this is appropriate for non-fiction authors. If you are a business-minded fiction author, you might also find it useful, but generally I think it's for non-fiction. We'll also be doing a live Q&A, so come and join us live or register to get the recording, thecreativepen.com/Jan18, J-A-N-1-8. Okay, thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments on the show. Remember to let me know what you're doing while you're listening. You can tweet me at The Creative Pen. That is the best way to tell me about it. So a couple of things. Jenny says, I've recently found your podcast and I'm loving it. Hi, Jenny. I really appreciate the mix of positivity and professionalism. Super. Thank you, Jenny. And I will definitely keep it positive in 2018. Don't know about you, but I am ready for a positive year. Jed in New Zealand says, it's New Year's Day here in New Zealand, and I've just got back from an early morning walk listening to your Christmas Day podcast on The Healthy Writer. Send a picture of his desks. Thank you, Jed. Alana sent a picture listening to the podcast at 20 below in Alaska. Yes, that's frost on my hair. Great picture, Alana. Paul Sating says 4:30 a.m. on New Year 2018. I'm heading to the airport while listening to the show. Fantastic. Lisa M. Lilly says, following advice in the last podcast on scheduling time in batches months in advance, finally saw why I feel short on time, though I work a lot. I've got more projects than time and need to prioritise now rather than on the fly. Thanks so much for sharing that, Lisa. And I really do think, you know, this is what I talked about last week in the New Year show. I talked about batching and how I'm really trying to batch things so that I can have more time for the things I want to do, because you know, when you try and split your attention between lots of different things, you often don't get as much done. So that's fantastic. I hope more of you are batching this year. That also relates to a tweet from Eileen Omosa, who says, what's my missing link? Every time I listen to the show, I get that nice feeling of I can do it. I have the ideas, but how do I achieve the act? And I responded to this question on Twitter, because I totally get what you mean, Eileen. I listen to lots of podcasts as well, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And then, you know, a month later, I go, oh, I didn't do that. Or even my own show, like Doug, the interview with Doug Smith on short fiction. I really want to do short fiction, but what happens is I have so many goals, I have to decide. So my answer to how do you get past the nice feeling and into the practicality is that batching or scheduling time. So I did 2 hours, this week I've done 7 hours work on my screenplay. Now, those 7 hours, which were done over 4 days, you know, at the cafe before I sort of start on everything else, those hours could have been spent on short fiction. But one of my goals is a screenplay, so I'm actually spending that time on the screenplay. So what can you schedule and what can you do in that time that will lead you towards one of your goals? And just don't get overwhelmed with everything. Pick one. And then at the end of the year, if you've achieved, you know, if I achieve the screenplay, I said 2 screenplays this year. If I achieve those 2 and don't do any short fiction, well, you know, I've still achieved. So that's the thing. Just a couple more. Eliza Peake, listening to the Roundup podcast while trying not to freeze in Atlanta. I went to sleep in GA, I think that's Georgia, right? And woke up in the Arctic. Okay, and finally, let's do. Kevin Partner says, just listened to the podcast and bought the Healthy Writer book. Thank you. Regarding the standing desk, IKEA do a cheap mechanical one and sent a picture of him at his desk, which is fantastic. And I do have an IKEA stand sit desk, but the motor broke, which is, I didn't buy the mechanical one with like a hand crank, which is the one I should have bought, because even hand cranking is exercise, right? But I now have a topper. So I'm going to actually be doing a blog post on desk setup soon, and we'll include pictures on that so you can see my setup. So today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark, and I use Ingram Spark for my extended distribution for my print books. And in 2017, I added paperbacks for my books and onto Ingram Spark, as well as doing large print editions for the Penny Appleton Sweet Romance books and workbook editions for the nonfiction. They also do hardbacks, which I'm looking at for 2018. They also have fantastic help. So when I wanted to get the print pre-order for Map of Shadows 3 before Christmas, I emailed them and they pushed it through to Amazon. So it's your content. Do more with it through ingramspark.com. Thanks also to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Sarah Crawford, Tari Akpadieti. Sorry, Tari, I hope I haven't completely murdered your name. Rita Camerano, Matt R. Miller, Sandra Cunha, Liv Campbell, and Mary Rhodes. Thank you to all those new patrons, and thanks to everyone who supports the show on Patreon. I really do appreciate it. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And remember, Patreon reversed their decision on fees. So giving just a couple of dollars a month, less than a coffee a month, is awesome and still the same deal as it used to be. So on Patreon, you can support the show and you'll get that extra monthly Q&A audio. And if you are a Patreon supporter, remember to get your questions in through the link that you have, the special link. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm back with Orna Ross. Hi, Orna.
Hi, Joanna. Hello, everyone.
So just a little introduction. Orna is a best-selling and award-winning author of historical and literary fiction, a poet and a non-fiction author of the Go Creative series. She's the founder of the Alliance of Independent Authors and has been named one of the 100 most influential people in publishing by the bookseller, the Trade Magazine of UK Publishers. She's also my friend and creative mentor, and I'm thrilled to have her back on the show. So Orna, this must be like your fourth time on the podcast.
It must be, and not the first time to talk about this book series, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I think, you know, one of the things we always talk about is how things change in our journey. But one of the things that doesn't seem to change for you and is the foundation of your practice is free writing. So I wonder if you could talk about what free writing is and why you think it's one of the most powerful ways to access the subconscious.
Yes, indeed. Love to talk about free writing anytime. It is free, is F-R-E-E. So it is a fast writing method. You write as fast as you can. And because you're writing very quickly, the words will come out raw, and raw in both senses. You know, you don't care about punctuation, spelling, any of the things that your English teacher would have given you a clatter on the back of the neck for back in my day for getting wrong. You forget about all of that. You're interested only in opening up really to what's rising through you. So it reverses the normal the way people approach writing, and particularly, you know, we write for other people. But writing for self is a very different experience. A lot of people approach the pen because they have been through a schooling system that can be quite punishing, approach the pen and paper or the laptop or whatever, approach the written word with a lot of tension and a lot of preconceived ideas and so on. So the aim of free writing is to write so fast that you get beyond that. You get beyond what in the Go Creative series I call the con mind, which is the surface chattering mind, and open a channel for the subconscious to rise. So generally what happens in a session is you start off actually writing from the surface mind, and you're quite emotions will come out, you know, whatever's bothering you at the time. But about halfway through, usually settle into a rhythm. You can see the writing often changes shape on the page, or if I'm watching people do it in a workshop scenario, I can see their bodies begin to kind of relax and the flow gets going, and that's what you're aiming for. The reason I use it all the time myself every day, and I pass it on to everybody who'll stop and listen to me, is because I actually do think we take writing for granted. We've forgotten how extremely powerful it is. And if you look at any of the research into, you know, fast writing, expressive writing, this type of writing for self, it's quite extraordinary what it's able to achieve. So it's being used now as medicine for post-traumatic stress syndrome, for physical ailments like arthritis, for example. A very short course of free writing can actually cure physical ailments, and it definitely is the cure for the sort of mind nonsense that can come between you and the thing you really want to do with your life. Because I work with writers, as you know, and other creative entrepreneurs, helping them to actually do what they most want to do. And anybody who's in that position knows the second you try to do what you most want to do, another part of you jumps back up and tries to stop you. And free writing for me is the most powerful tool we have to dissolve resistance. Daily free writing will keep you in flow.
So we talked there about F and R, I think. You didn't describe what the two E's are.
E and D is exact but easy. And what that is talking about is drawing on the experience of your own life. So being precise about the sensual detail, if you like, of the moment that you're in as you're writing, or the moment that you're writing about. So when we write, again, for self or for others, we very often concentrate on our feelings, you know, what we're feeling about something. We use a lot of adjectives. Or if we do get into a sort of a sense perception, it tends to be sight. So the exact is encourages people to be very precise about what they're seeing, yes, but also hearing, smelling, tasting, you know, the full sensory experience. They're the outer senses, and then the inner senses also of imagining, you know, what if, and allowing room for insight to rise as well. So that's where exact and easy comes in. That takes a little bit of training. Writing fast and raw just can happen automatically. Exact and easy takes a little bit of time, and it can feel contradictory, you know, on the one hand saying write very fast, on the other hand saying, you know, be exact. But the overall thing to remember is to take it easy and to let it be. So it's an allowing sort of thing. It's an accepting what rises rather than trying to control from the top down.
And I guess a couple of other things. It needs to be timed. Is that correct?
Time or space. So the notebook, the free writing notebook that accompanies the Go Creative series, that allows for 3 pages a day, or else you set a time. And it's very important to finish the space or time allocation that you've set aside. Mm-hmm. It's the same with meditation or exercise or anything like that that you set yourself to do. It's very often when the end is in sight is when you begin to get the benefits. And, you know, wandering away or indeed overdoing it and going past the time is not the practice. The practice is to set yourself your intention around what it is you're going to do. 3 pages for most people is about 20 minutes. And that can sound like a lot, but actually it gives you back so much time by doing it, just in the sense of clarity that you get, the way in which you find your day is far more organized, you're much more connected to what's most important to you. That 20 minutes actually gets you back hours and hours and whole lifetimes in some ways.
And it's interesting because I guess, you know, I see that as almost how I start writing fiction, as well as how I would start writing, well, anything, I guess, is some. And I think timed writing of any kind is the secret to being a writer, a successful writer, because if you can't sit down and write something, you know, you're going to struggle. So it's interesting that the time is important, but also the questions that you ask. So I don't do a daily practice like that. And some people, maybe it doesn't suit them daily, but I do a kind of sporadic when I need to answer a question. So I think the sort of what do you really want to do with your life is one example of an interesting question. But what are some of the questions that people could be asking themselves if they want to try free writing? You know, how could they spark, how do they spark that first sentence? Because that can sometimes be the hardest thing.
Oh, yes, the blank page. Well, there are lots and lots of exercises in the free writing book, which is part of the series. But it really very much depends on what you want to do with it. So I do encourage people to just turn up to the page, to say go and to see what arises. That's really quite scary. But when you do it, you realize that your mind is always producing thoughts. Just like your lungs are always producing breath, your mind produces thoughts. It cannot help but do that. Mm. So if you do find it scary and you find that you can't, you can actually write, I can't think what to write, I can't think what to write, I can't think what to write, until actually a coherent thought arises. So that's what we would call free writing. And then there's what you're talking about there, which would be focused free writing, where you'd concentrate in on something specific. So as we're talking a lot to writers, you know, your audience is largely writers who are going to be listening to this, you could bring your latest create a challenge in your book. So, you know, your character's not doing what they want to do, or you want to get to know your character better. A great exercise for developing character is to actually, you know, imaginatively stretch your character out on a sofa, and you are a psychoanalyst and you ask the questions and you just take dictation from your character and write it down. That can be a really great way of getting to know them in ways that are, you know, kind of deep and meaningful and useful. But honestly, you can use it for anything in your life. So if you have any issue that's driving you crazy, bring it to the free writing notebook. The wonderful thing about the notebook is that if you're going to a therapist or somebody else, a healer or somebody for help, you know, their energy comes in as well. And it's very much about the relationship with them and so on. And sometimes you could be pushed more than you're comfortable with or not brought on as fast. The notebook meets you where you are and you can't pass yourself out. It's a very safe place. So really and truly, you can bring anything you want to it, whatever you want to focus on that day.
Mm. One of the, because I've been to several of your workshops, we've obviously done workshops together, and one of the exercises that I found very powerful, and many people do kind of struggle with, and then they're like, this was the best thing I've ever done, even though they struggle with it, is the letter to money. And what I think is important to kind of stress with your creative process and the Go Creative series is that money and a side that many authors struggle with is actually part of what you're talking about, how to create anything that also includes money and wealth. So talk about the letter to money. What is it? And if people were going to do it, what would they do? And what are the common issues that you see coming up out of that exercise?
Yes, it's always a powerful one. And you're absolutely right. Money is key to this whole series. It turns up all over the place. There is a book just devoted to the relationship with money called Creating Money, Creating Meaning. But actually, as I'm going back through these books, which are now very much directed at creative entrepreneurs, I find money just jumping up all over the place. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. And I find the relationship that people have with money so compelling and so interesting and so revealing of lots of other things that are going on in their lives and in their businesses, obviously. So, yeah, it's very simple. I say, you know, write a letter to money, tell money what you think of it, go. And they look really startled and then they have to write because I'm there at the top of the room saying, you must do this. And so they write to money. And very often it starts in quite a negative place or sad for some people, or there might be anger, but quite strong emotions arise in this letter. And then, of course, there's the second part. We go through various things in the day, but later on, depending on how long the workshop is, one of the last things I will do is actually ask them then to dictate a letter from money to them. And that's when I think a lot of the revelations appear and when people begin to understand that this is a relationship. So none of us has been given a very good grounding in relating to money. And there's so much psychic baggage carried around this, that we grow up with, you know, whatever baggage our parents brought into us to start with, plus our own socioeconomic history, our own work history, and so on. And as creatives, very often we have been positioned as sort of the opposite to money, the anti-money in a way. Mm-hmm. We're creative and spiritual and, you know, in our garret and removed from all that, and money is grubby and over there. And this is one of the great myths, and it is so damaging. And it has been so damaging to creatives, to women, to everybody who, you know, is in a sense considered not to be part of the worldly world, but, you know, which is the vast majority of people. It's crazy. So it's one of my missions to actually try and get people into positive connection and positive relationship with money, because I say how you do money is how you do life. And that is because money is empty. It's just energy. It's just a symbol of your exchange with the world. Essentially, you know, you offer out something, somebody gives you money, or you hand over money and somebody gives you something back in exchange for that. But because it's empty and purely symbolic, it carries an awful lot of emotional resonance. And that can be negative, but it can just as easily be positive. And sometimes that letter exchange between money and the person and the person and money is completely liberating. It's enough. It's enough to change people from, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it takes more than that.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think the personification of money, help, even just the idea of that, like starting a letter, dear money, comma, new line, you're like, oh my goodness, you know, that completely changes the way you think about it. And to me, it makes it quite friendly, to be honest, because I don't write letters like that unless it's kind of like a friendly thing. But it's interesting, because I've done it 2 years in a row, and my answer, you know, my letters have changed in a year. And I mean, I was positive about money, and I'm now even more positive about money. But it's interesting, because my letter from money back to me is even more friendly and more welcoming. And and also, it's interesting, we talk about collaboration, and my letter from money said, you know, I want to collaborate with you more and help you do more. And I think what's so, I mean, you and I, this is not a political show, but the money and politics right now is also wound up in some negativity around, you know, wealthy people X, poor people Y. And these things become very emotional and very over the top, whereas actually the people who can form the most change in the world are often the people with the most money too. So we look at the biggest philanthropists and a lot of the change that's happening through giving wealth away. So it's so interesting to think about reframing all these different things. So why do creatives have such an issue with this, and how can they get over it?
I honestly do think it's because it's a taught thing. You know, I blame the romantics, the romantic movement, because it, up to there was a much more workmanlike sort of understanding of the creative, the artisan, you know, the craftsperson. It was a group of people who got on with it and did what they did. And then there was the romantic movement, which enshrined, you know, this idea of God in nature and the genius, you know, the creative genius. So many myths that are so difficult for creatives to get over, and indeed fell a lot of people so that they never get over it, were born at that time. And we were all brought up in that and kind of saturated in it. And people love the idea that they love to polarize things anyway. It makes everything very simple. If that's over there and that's over there, but it's not like that at all. It's an intimate relationship, and everything is a relationship, and everything is interconnected. And now that we have an understanding of life, you know, through quantum physics and through the internet and through all sorts of other things, where we understand the importance of collaboration and interconnection. Mm. I was reading yesterday or the day before for an article that I'm doing about the birth of human creativity, and they reckon it is now very much, the evidence really does, it's been thought about for a while, but the evidence is just mounting and mounting, that it actually emerged at a time where for the first time there were a lot of human beings in interrelationship. And language, again, is key. So they gave a task to children, chimps, and another primate, I can't remember which type, and set them a task. And they found that the children were able to do the task. The primates were not able to do the task, and the reason was collaboration, connection, talking about it, helping each other, encouraging each other, showing each other how it's done, exactly what we do in Ally and all the other creative groups that are forming on the internet at the moment. And that's why we're in the middle of such a creative flowering. So I think, to go back to, I haven't forgotten your question, to go back to the question you actually asked, we've got to take this in, and we have to transform our thinking, and free writing is actually a brilliant way to do that. Mm. But so is listening to the people who are actually creating, and the people who are producing are people who have let these myths go. They've dissolved them for themselves. You know, they've felt the fear and done it anyway. They've chosen themselves to put themselves forward. They're doing the work, they're making it happen. They're not waiting for permission. You know, they are breaking chains that they have been taught to have. And I'm hopeful that the new generation, you know, coming up now won't have as many chains around their creativity as my generation had. I think yours had a bit less, and the next one a bit less again. But there will always be psychic chains. It's part of being a human being. And the creative's job is always to dissolve those as much as possible. So be gone, silly myths that get in our way. And, you know, we have to start there. Nobody can do that for you. And until you do that, you don't really get going.
And it's also interesting because, you know, I think a lot of writing nonfiction now is also sharing our personal journey. You know, it can't just be prescriptive anymore. So we have to share our own writing. And I certainly share some of my free writing, my journals in my nonfiction books. And it's often those parts that really help people. So I wondered about you, because you and I have been talking about this Go Creative series for, oh, it must be like 3 years. And you've been
five maybe.
And even before you've been working in this industry a long time. You're also Irish, which has a very protected view of literature and a lot of grants. So there is quite a poverty mindset around stuff in Ireland with literature. And you're a poet, which has this history of poverty. Although, again, the Instagram poets now, like Rupi Kaur and people, are doing very, very well. So how has your own journey been reflected in this Go Creative series? And has there been a sort of big shift in you over this time?
Yes. In short, and the reason it has taken so long and gone through so many, I mean, this is the third, not the third draft, it was the 103rd draft, but it's actually the third major shift in the books, and they had to wait, in a sense, for me to catch up with them and catch up with myself and understand what was going on. And that was the delay and the twists and the turns. And I started in the wrong place, in a sense. You know, if I was starting now, they would be written clearly and cleanly. And but I began, as you say, I grew up in Ireland. When I went to school, I completely fell in love with the written word. It was my savior in so many ways. I was in boarding school, and, you know, all sorts of situations. I just escaped into books and then escaped into my own writing. And it was absolutely fantastic. And I was in love with words, but I never for a second thought I could be a writer. Writers were James Joyce and W.B. Yeats. They were dead, they were white, and they were definitely male and old and imperious and scary. And, you know, it didn't even cross my mind. The closest I could even think about coming to it was to teach English literature. So that's what I went to college to train to do. And that's where I started. And then I did make a life in the written word. And I have worked in this area for a long time. And I did realize that what I was interested in was not just the word, but the process itself. The actual creative process is endlessly fascinating. It's the one topic that I never grow tired of. I just can't get enough of still, even after all these years. So, but it did take me, I had to unlearn a fierce amount of things, because I also came up through trade publishing and, you know, literary fiction, historical fiction, poetry. These are genres where thinking is very tight, where there's a lot of judgment and there's a lot of in some cases, snobbery. And, you know, I carried some unconscious things like that myself without even knowing that I did. And that's why self-publishing and the world of self-publishing and the creative entrepreneur world generally has been so liberating for me, but it just took me a while, longer than it should have. But there you go.
Well, I think it's also interesting because often there are some people who write nonfiction as a business card for their other work. You know, a lot of business people will have a book, or a speaker will have a book, but us as also fiction writers and people who write to understand what the hell we think. And basically you've been working out what you think. So we write nonfiction almost to help ourselves. And then at the end of the process, we've worked it out and then we can help other people. So, you know, how do you balance your poetry? And I mean, I almost feel sometimes that fiction is a more not selfish or not self-centered, all these words have negative connotations, but it's focused on what I actually care about most. Actually, I don't care what other people think when I write my fiction, and then I put it out in the world and it falls through the cracks in genre and whatever. But my nonfiction, I write very much with I do want to help other people, so I have to structure it in a way that is a journey for them. So how do you balance those sort of different sides in you, the poet, the literary writer, the fiction writer, the nonfiction writer?
Yeah, it's very simple for me, mornings and afternoons. So first thing in the morning is when poetry and fiction, or what I would call deep writing, because sometimes the style of nonfiction that I do also draws on that place, and some parts of it are quite practical and more hard-headed. And then obviously there's Running Ally, and the other small community which I've started, but is also growing, the Creativist Club. So all of those things together, I get up very early. I love to rise when the world is quiet and do that sort of writing at that time. And then when I've written myself out, I'm happy to leave that for the rest of the day and put my attentions elsewhere. And I actually, rather than feeling I know a lot of people do struggle with this and feel that there is a conflict. I'm the opposite. I actually feel really privileged and delighted that I have found work where I can kind of develop all the different aspects of myself, because I was never just somebody who just wrote and locked myself away. I like people. I like, I really love all that the internet has facilitated. I like digital commerce. I like technology and the stuff that's coming. I'm not very techie minded when it comes to doing technical things, but I'm trying to be better.
You're doing a lot better.
Thank you. Tech mom.
But it is interesting, because I think I'm feeling that too. Like, I feel a lot more, I think I've struggled for so long. I'm like, oh, but I want to be a full-time fiction writer. And then I'm like, oh, but actually I want to be a full-time nonfiction author and be like, you know, speaking and Tony Robbins. And I think I feel much more at peace right now at this moment. I'm quite balanced in that I'm very happy with them both. And that sounds like where you are. It's like, I don't actually want to give up being either of these things. And you don't have to, do you?
You absolutely don't. And that's the joy and beauty of the world we're in now. It was harder before. And I think I'm a better poet or fiction writer because I do these other things. I think the kind of writer that locks themselves away, you can get very good writing for a while, but after a while that seam runs dry. It is immersion in life that keeps writing lively and vital. And you know, I don't think it is a good idea to just, unless, I mean, look, there are no rules in this game, and there are people who do that and it works very well for them. But it definitely does not work for me. And I don't think it works for as many people as, you know, it's almost like that's the held up as the desirable norm that most of us would opt for if we were given the opportunity. And I think self-publishing revealed just how many writers were not like that. Mm. And I don't know that it is the norm or should be the, you know, what we're holding up, because I don't think there's one real problem that I see with that is that most people are not going to be able to write enough or in the right genre to actually be able to sustain themselves just doing one form of writing, you know, and locking themselves away and just themselves and their imagination. And I mean, there will always be some people for whom that works, but most writers, most creative entrepreneurs need multiple streams of income, and they need multiple engagement levels, you know, with the world and with the services and the products and stuff that they're offering out to the world. So I think it would be much more sensible if we were making that the norm, and then the person who decides to completely specialize, and that would be more like every other field. You know, you have generalists and then you have a few specialists, not everybody's trying to be a specialist.
I think also, you know, we talk about generational shift. I talk about it on the podcast, you talk about it, and you have millennial kids as well, which I think is, and they're doing amazing things. And what they say now is that, the boomers certainly, and then your generation, my generation, many people had one career and that was actually the norm. Whereas the millennials, and like what we're seeing with indie, is people don't just have one career anymore. They may do lots of different jobs. They, you know, might do this and that, or this, then that, and they might move. And so I almost think it's a cultural generational shift anyway, that we don't have one specialism. We actually have these different roles and hats and jobs and streams of income.
I completely agree. And to me, that is also a sign of that we are in the creative age, because actually, if you look at the back of lots of authors, you know, when they do the little bio on the back of the book, so many people say, you know, I've been a barmaid and an aerobics instructor and a this and a that, you know, I was down the mines and up, you know, as a probation officer, and now I write fiction, you know. So I think creators have always done that. Mm. And now everybody, I really believe it's got to the point that you can no longer count on having a sim. Why anybody ever wanted that, I don't know. But you know, it is not actually counting on that is not a very good career plan now. And the ability to change, to shift and turn is actually going to become a key skill. And these are creative skills that are popping up and needed now all over the place, as you say, no matter what you're in. So, yeah, it's really interesting times.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, I'm happily child-free, but my sisters have kids and my cousins, and I'm an auntie and a godmother and everything. And when, you know, they ask me about their kids and being creative or what they should be learning because of the shifts, the biggest thing I say is, like, they should just be creative. Anything they're interested in, just, like, let encourage them to do creative projects. The only thing that will continue is the ability to react in a creative way and do projects and, you know, learn. I think the excitement in learning new things is so important, because technology does change, right? And I think people who are stuck in an old way will get left behind with that. So, it, you know, if as long as kids and also older kids like us, we have to keep being focused on creativity and learning, they're probably the only two skills that are important.
I agree completely. And if you have never had the experience of taking a project from, you know, conception to completion, if you haven't felt, you know, put through, not up here, but through your hands and every other part of you, the seven stages of the creative, once you've done that once, doing it the second time is easier, and the more times you do it, the easier it gets. Mm. The flow happens more. But if you've never done it, if nobody's ever shown you, if you don't know what it is to create, if you don't know that conscious creation even is a thing, you know, if you don't trust your own creative capacity, you think life hands you a deal and you think you are the passive recipient of life happening to you, then you're instantly at a disadvantage, and even more so at a time like ours. But you know, once you understand that actually, and this is another myth that needs to go out the window, you know, that the creativity is some kind of special gift given to a few people. Once you understand that it's actually a universal thing that's going on all the time, that we are all always creating, either consciously or unconsciously, that we're offering everything out, receiving everything back, and that we actually can not completely control, but we certainly can shape our experience of our own life force moving through us. Well, that's huge. The difference between somebody who understands that about themselves and somebody who doesn't is the difference between being empowered and being disempowered.
Yes. And that word power, it's funny, we keep coming back to it. And, you know, I think it's indies are certainly getting to a point where we're becoming a force to be reckoned with and have more power. And it feels like authors have always been disempowered by the publishing industry. It's like, first of all, it's the very first interaction is begging for attention and rejection. And that has kind of gone into the soul of what being an author is supposed to be about. Whereas, you know, I actively chose to be indie from the beginning. And I've kind of never experienced that. But you, it's funny because a couple of years ago, you and I have spoken at some conferences together. And a couple of years ago, I had said to you, I think we are a completely different industry. And I, you know, I told you this the other day, but you at the time, you were like, no, it's really important that we are there, you know. But in the last few weeks, you've had a shift, haven't you, in considering the difference between indie and traditional. What has that shift been?
Yeah, I think, again, that's the difference between somebody like you coming in clean, starting off at a time when the tools are there, and somebody like me who's come up through the machine. I still do think that we need, as people who sell books, we need to be in bookstores, we need to be wherever readers are found, we need to be part of the books ecosystem, and I will continue to advocate for that and you know, keep trying to open up to indie authors campaign will remain live until indies are everywhere that everyone else is. But the shift that really, what has become very clear to me, and it wasn't so much of a shift as a sort of a slow evolution, a slow dawning and realization that indie authors have far more in common with other creative entrepreneurs, particularly other digital entrepreneurs, than we have with people who are trade published or aiming to be trade published or want to be trade published. It's a different business model. It's a different mindset. It's a different, everything is different. It's different from top to bottom. And I think as indie authors, we can learn more from our colleagues in the music industry, filmmakers, gamers, techies, counselors, life coaches, you know, business people who are building businesses that are taking in publishing into their business. And by publishing, I mean publishing a book, as you said, as, you know, as a kind of a business calling card. But they are also needing to learn how to publish themselves and create a platform and a profile and put themselves out there. These are all skills that should come easier to us as writers. We should have the advantage there. But we're spending a lot of time feeling quite, you know, but not everybody by any means, but there is still a rumbling of discontent in the community about, oh, we have to do that awful stuff called marketing. While we'd really rather be doing that lovely stuff called writing. And that's that sort of duality, I think, is another form of disempowerment. And, you know, we say that the publishing industry disempowered writers, and that is not untrue. That is definitely, it did happen. But writers disempowered themselves went into, you know, business conversations with publishers on their knees and said, yes, you know,
may I'll sign anything. Yeah.
I don't need any money. Just I am so grateful that you like me, you know, that kind of thing. And even back then, when there was no other option, I always found that hard to take, because it is business. You know, the second you're not in the writing space, and perhaps even while you are in the writing space, it's much, you know, that's something to think about. But certainly when you're talking to somebody about a business transaction, they're going to make money from your intellectual property. You owe it to yourself and you owe it to other writers not to disempower yourself before you even get started. So I think the equivalent of that in the indie space is, oh, I don't want to market my books. I just want to write them. And, you know, I think it's about a mindset shift and the kind of language that we use around that. We need to change that, because the person who makes that decision, because that is a choice. If you're going to make that choice, you're actually choosing not to succeed. You're choosing probably not. I mean, there may be a miracle comes in your window and you might, but chances are you're actually choosing not to have readers, not to have an influence, not to make an impact, and not to see your book sell. So you have to start there. And if you don't like the word marketing, then call it something else. I don't like the word marketing. I rarely use it. I talk about reaching readers. I talk about increasing influence, because I'm more comfortable with those terms. So find terms that you're comfortable with. But also realize that as a writer, you have set out to kind of invade people's brains. You know, you do
in a good way.
In a positive way, I hope, and all of that. But, you know, that's in you. You do want that. You do actually want that power. So don't let that want kind of frighten you. Follow it through to its logical conclusion, which is called success.
Yeah, so powerful words there, and also a police siren, because Orna's recording in central London. So we live in the world as well as in our heads.
Absolutely.
So important. So we're pretty much out of time, but what I'd love you to do is, because there are a lot of books in the Go Creative series, I wonder if you could just give us an idea of the ecosystem, the different topics that you're covering, so that people get an idea of what these books are and where they're going.
Yes, I mean, there are a lot of books, but they're short. And I thought it was better to have a number of short books than to have one great big tome. The first three, the first one is about going creative. So we use the word go creative because it's something you do. It's an activity. It's not another intellectual pursuit. It's actually, and all the different ways in which one goes creative. So that is essentially about establishing yourself as a creative person, understanding the hallmarks of creativity, the principles, practices, you know, a sort of a general overview for the first book. The second book then is called How to Create Anything. And it presents the creative process from start to finish and just talks about the different phases of that process, which if you're making something small is not relevant. But as soon as you're making something that is a challenge, like an iBook series, it kind of helps to know what stage you're at, because different stages and phases of the process require different skills and different approaches. So that's that one. The third one then is about creative success, about the psychology of what we were talking about there earlier, the psychology of creative success, what it looks like, how it feels, and how to succeed, essentially. And then the next three are practice books. One for body, one for mind, one for spirit. So there's a free writing book, which is the practice we discussed here today. There's a body practice called Effortless Exercise, which includes things like yoga and chi running and essentially any exercise that doesn't have a goal. You know, it's not about sports, not about winning, it's not about games. It's done for its own sake. Mm. And I think that is the kind of exercise, in my experience, that most creatives actually have an affinity for. They don't tend to like the world of sport or whatever. So there is a thing of personal bests that happens. But anyway, that's exercise. And the third one then is a meditation specifically around cultivating creativity, inspiration, and so on. So that's three practice books. And then the others are application of the process to specific things. So the money one is number seven. There's a few workbooks as well, and there is an introductory book, which is a compendium, which is very much about cultivating the create state and what that create state is, getting into flow, a general sort of overview of that from my a very personal sort of perspective, with some poetry in it and fiction extracts and things as well. And that's it. So, you know, it took a while, but there's a lot in it.
That's it. And I know how long this has taken you. Like you said, it's probably been your journey since you were at school, really.
Possibly, actually, yes, I guess so. It does. It sums up a lifetime's philosophy. And, you know, it answers everything for me. There is nothing. I don't have any life questions left.
The universe will bring you more.
It's just, but you just live it now, you know. I can always, the creative way as an approach for me is the answer to so many questions that I had as a young person. So
yeah, but I just also, I just tying it back to the personal again, you mentioned philosophy, and these aren't philosophy books because you've lived this. I mean, you have been quite open about going through cancer. You've had some issues, you know, with family health, and, you know, so you've used this process to get through the darkest times in your life.
Absolutely, definitely. And I do talk about that in these books, and the way in which, you know, the having that creative way gave me the strength and resilience that had I tried to approach it from the more conventional perspective and the way you're told to manage these things, it wouldn't have worked. Had I tried to build the Alliance of Independent Authors on conventional business principles, it would never have happened. It's just not, I cannot do that. I am not able to do that. But there is another messy, you know, more exploratory, more experimental way that you can do things. And nobody tells you that. So these books are here to tell you that. Mm. You can actually make it up as you go along. You can fall flat on your face and pick yourself up and get on with it. You can meet a lot of rejection. It doesn't matter, as long as you just keep smiling and go again, you know, and knowing what you're trying to do, knowing your creative intention, knowing the values that you're bringing to it, what your purpose is, what you're trying to make happen. All of these things make you very strong and unshakable. They give you a very solid foundation, but they also set you free. You don't, you know, things like comparisonitis and anger at the world for not understanding you and all of that kind of stuff melts away because you're too busy just getting on doing stuff. You don't have so much time for thinking and feeling. And it certainly helped me. So hopefully it'll help one or two other people as well.
Yeah, it's fantastic because I mean, I'm the Creative Pen, that's my website, and I want to write a book on creativity at some point, but it's a bit like what you're saying, it's such a big topic that I feel like it might take me another 10 years to write that book as well.
It's funny, it's such a big topic, and what I realized, what finally clicked for me, and really only very recently, was that you have to find your lens through which you look at it must be very small indeed. And if you go small enough, you can kind of take it all in. But if you're trying to catch hold of the whole thing, it's like trying to grasp water. It just runs away. You know, you can't actually hold it. So for me, understanding that actually the people I wanted to talk to were creative entrepreneurs, and what I wanted to talk to them about was money and running a successful creative entrepreneurial business and how that feeds into everything in their lives. Once I had that lens, everything started to fall into play. It was all there, but I just couldn't see it. When I was thinking of creativity in more spiritual terms or more, you know, I was widening it out and applying it to everything in life, which it can. You can do that, but don't try to write about it. But it's too hard. It really is. And it becomes very kind of fuzzy-wuzzy and it just didn't have the roots that it now has. So, yeah.
Fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to all the books. I've been with you as on part of this journey, so I'm definitely looking forward to it. So where can people find you and the books online and all your books, everything you do?
Everything I do. OrnaRoss.com essentially is my everything is there, and under my books there is a section, the Go Creative books are there, and there is a club associated with it because I did want to have a community aspect to it. I've seen how useful that is in Ally. Now it's not a formal association like Ally at all. It's a much more informal thing, a motivation and accountability group called the Creativist Club, which I will open in January and just take in a few members, and we will kind of work together through the principles and practices. And I see these books will probably go through a bit more iteration and development after they're out, once I see how people are actually receiving them. But so it's all there anyway, OrnaRoss.com.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Orna.
Oh, thank you, Joe. Always a pleasure.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Orna Ross and that you got some great ideas for your creative year ahead. So coming up next week, I'll be doing another show with just me, and I'll be looking to the year ahead and considering some trends and forecasts that might impact authors and creators. So have a wonderful writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.